Welcome to Already Perfect, the Seattle Soto Zen podcast.
To lecture 4 out of 6 on Dawkins' essay "Being Time" from his "Treasury of the True Dharma Eye." When I decided to make 2021 the year of Dogen, for whatever reason, I decided to do that to myself this year. I was excited to lecture on Vendala and Genjo Koan. I thought those were going to go well. But I wasn't actually intending to discuss Bujji. I thought I'd do maybe the Mountains and Waters Sutra. But then people kept asking for Uji, so this morning we're getting Uji. I guess I call my parents every Sunday right after morning service and an informal Sangha discussion. So like around noon on Sunday, I call my parents. And I told them that I was going to be giving lectures on this, on being time, and that it was a notoriously difficult essay in Dogen Shobo Genzo. And very sweetly, every Sunday, I called them and my dad asked me, how did your lecture go? Why don't you be worried about it? So did it go okay? And so far, you know, at least from my perspective, it hasn't been that bad. You know? I tend to be able to say, you know, something, at least, in regards to whatever portion of being time we're discussing that Sunday. And last week, I told my dad, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I seem to be getting away with it so far. And then I got to today's topic. I read the first paragraph of the three paragraphs we're going to be discussing today, and read it over, and I went, what? And then I read the available commentaries, and I went, what? And then I took a break and heated up some leftover pizza with the idea that, you know, everything's always better on a full stomach, but that didn't help either. And maybe it's appropriate to be stumped by the time being on this particular day. Because we know that humans don't understand time. But even if we could understand time, nobody would be able to understand daylight savings time. So it's a good day for stumbling around and saying, what? So I'll make my best effort, though, because that is the topic today, is making my best effort in each moment. But not yet. This section isn't actually about that yet. So Dogen says, you may suppose that time is only passing away and not understand that time never arrives. Although understanding itself is time, understanding does not depend on its own arrival. People only see times coming and going and do not thoroughly understand that the time being abides in each moment. This being so, when can they penetrate the barrier? Even if people will recognize the time being in each moment, who could give expression to this recognition? Even if they could give expression to this recognition for a long time, who could stop looking for the realization of the original face? According to ordinary people's view of the time being, even enlightenment and nirvana as the time being would be merely aspects of coming and going. If anyone actually understood that, I can give you the mic. But I gotta try to break this down into smaller sections and metaphor. So in regard to time, we strive to comprehend only how relentlessly it is passing. We do not understand it intellectually as what is yet to come. Even though intellectual understanding is time, no circumstances are ever influenced by it. So this made me think of, there's quite a long section in the Sharangama Sutra where Guanyin speaks of liberation through the sense of hearing. Yeah, she says any sense might work, but hearing is preferable for various reasons. And in the Sharangama Sutra, Guanyin says, I entered into the stream of the self-nature of the sense of hearing, thereby limiting the sound of what was heard. Now, proceeding from this stillness, both sound and silence cease to arise. Advancing in this way, both hearing and what was heard melt away and vanish. When hearing and what is heard are both forgotten, then the sense of hearing leaves no impression in the mind. When sense and the objects of sense both become empty, then emptiness and sense merge and reach a state of absolute perfection. When emptiness and what is being emptied are both extinguished, then arising and extinction are naturally extinguished. At this point, the absolute emptiness of nirvana becomes manifest, and suddenly I transcend the mundane and the supramundane world. If you didn't get that, fortunately, in Mahayana Sutra, so tell you something and then they'll repeat it as a poem. So, Guanyin repeats what you just said as a poem. The nature of sounds is based in movement and stillness. One hears according to whether there is sound. With no sound, there is said to be no hearing. But this does not mean that the hearing has no nature. In the absence of sound, the nature is not gone, nor does it only arise in the presence of sound. Entirely beyond production and extinction, it is truly everlasting, present even in dream thinking. It does not disappear when conditions and thought are gone. Enlightened, this contemplation transcends cognition, reaching beyond both the body and the mind. Now in the Saha world, the theory of sounds has been proclaimed and understood. Living beings are confused about the source of hearing. They follow sounds and so they turn and flow. Ananda's power to remember what the Buddha said was exceptional, but it was not enough for him to attain enlightenment. Was it not from heeding sounds that he was nearly lost? By turning back the flow, one will make no such mistake. What I think Guanyin is saying here is, instead of doing what I normally do upon hearing something, which is to think, what is that? What did they say? Who said that? Is to turn my attention inwards and sort of look at what changed in my mind when I became aware of the sound. And what happened in my mind, in my senses, when I became aware of the absence of the sound. In his book, Taking Our Places, Norman Fisher talked about, he had meetings with preteen boys to talk about, how to grow up, how to grow up and become, a mature human being. And they started each meeting by ringing a bell with the challenge that the boys were supposed to raise their hand when they perceived that they couldn't hear the bell anymore. So at the moment where they stopped being able to hear the bell, they were supposed to raise their hand, which is very hard to do. But if we turn our attention to the experience of the senses themselves, and then actually to even the moment before the awareness of what we know we sense, because we sense it before we're aware of it, then we have some understanding of things arising, how things arise in the mind, and how they pass away. So I think that's what Guanyin is saying in the Shirin Brahma Sutra. And I think that in Uji, Dogen is, Guanyin is talking about liberation through our sense of hearing. And Dogen is now talking about liberation through our sense of being time. Dogen goes on to say, human skin bags recognize time as coming and going. No one has penetrated it as being time abiding in its place. How much less could any experience time having passed through the gate? Passing through the gate is enlightenment. It's having a breakthrough. Daikon spoke last Tuesday about koan practice. And we talked about passing through the gate of Mu, the first koan. But you have to, for realization, you have to pass through the gate of Mu. Dogen is saying, human beings only understand time is coming and going. We don't realize it as abiding in its place. How much less could any of us experience time having passed through the gate? So, in Zazen, we practice awareness of breathing. I remember early on in my meditation practice, I had a teacher tell me to concentrate on the pause between the inhale and the exhale. And my initial response was, on the what now? Because I was not aware that there was a pause between the inhale and the exhale. Because I saw breathing as only coming and going, and not in abiding for each moment. When I have a headache, I am very confident that I know what happiness is. And happiness is not having a headache, right? But by the time I notice my headache has gone away, I've already found something else to be irritated by. So, I'm always chasing after a happiness that never arrives. I think that's kind of kind of what Dogen's talking about. Goes on to say, even among those who are conscious of abiding in their place, who could express the state of having already attained the ineffable? Even among those who have been asserting for a long time that they are like this, there is no one who is still not groping for the manifestation of their original face. To manifest the original face is to fully express ourselves, our fundamental enlightened nature, to really thoroughly understand my own human life and express it as awakening. So, I'm not really very good at doing that. And that's what Dog is talking about. You know, we're still stumbling. All of us are stumbling around in the dark. Some of us might have a little bit more understanding than others, but, you know, we're all kind of still stumbling in the dark. If we leave even enlightenment and nirvana as they are, in the time being of the common man, even enlightenment and nirvana are merely a form which goes and comes, being time. So when we talk about attaining enlightenment or getting enlightened, like as if it was a train that we were running to catch, right? And it's not. Because, you know, Dogen's teaching says again and again, enlightenment is the fundamental nature of all being in each moment right now. And it's not something that goes away and comes back. It's not something that, you know, I can lose and somebody else will find my enlightenment. You know, outside the Zendo somewhere. It is, you know, the fundamental nature of my own human life that can only be expressed by me in this moment. It's not something that goes and comes. In the 1963 Dharma talk, Shunryu Suzuki said, Zen may be said to be the practice of cultivating our mind to make it deep and open enough to accept the various seeds of ideas and thoughts as they are. When this kind of perfect acceptance takes place, everything will orient itself according to its own nature and the circumstances. We call this activity the great activity. Reality can be said to be the bed that is deep and soft enough to accept everything as it is. When you accept everything, everything is beyond dimensions. The earth is not great, and a grain of sand is not small. In the realm of great activity, picking up a grain of sand is the same as taking up the whole universe. To save one sentient being is to save all sentient beings. Your efforts of this moment to save one person is the same as the eternal merit of Buddha. So being time continues with an examination of our efforts of this moment to save one person and the eternal merit of Buddha to save all sentient beings. The time being is entirely actualized without being caught up in nets or cages. Deva kings and heavenly beings appearing to the right and to the left are the time being of your complete effort right now. The time being of all beings throughout the world in water and on land is just the actualization of your complete effort right now. all beings of all kinds in the visible and invisible realms, by the time being actualized by your complete effort, flowing due to your complete effort. David kings and heavenly beings appearing to the right and to the left are the time being of your complete effort right now. The time being of all beings throughout the world in water and on land is just the actualization of your complete effort right now. All beings of all kinds in visible and invisible realms are the time being actualized by your complete effort, flowing due to your complete effort. So the question that drove the young novice Ehe Dobin to seek a teacher in China was, if we're already completely enlightened, why do we have to practice so hard for so long? And after several years of investigation, Dobin came to the conclusion that although our Buddha nature is always present, is always continually acting and moving in us and in the world, in order to manifest it, we need to make an effort right now. We need to actually do something. Possibly my favorite koan from the Blue Cliff Record. It goes like this. The monk asked Kyurin, what was the true intention of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? Kyurin responded, sitting long and getting tired. But just making this effort, whether we see its benefit or not, sitting Zazen in the morning and getting tired. That's the whole reason for the existence of Zen. That is why Dogen went to China. That is why Bodhidharma went to China. That is what all the ancestral teachers have passed down to us, is making this effort. Sitting on and getting tired. And each moment is the universe, then in category really, he really gets excited about this complete effort right now in this moment. He says, Zen is a practice of action. Sometimes people think that Zen practice is a bridge between suffering and happiness. First we practice, and then later we will be happy. But practice and happiness are not separate. Practice is not a bridge. Practice itself is joy. If you practice Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path of right seeing, thought, speech, conduct, livelihood, effort, mindfulness, and concentration completely, there is egolessness within your practice. Practicing egolessness doesn't mean that you destroy yourself and then something changes in the future. It means that it comes up simultaneously with the activity of practice itself, and that practice is free from suffering. You can change the nature of time and space. How? You have to manifest time and space that you don't know within the time and space that you do know. This is not only Zen practice. This is practice for everyone. Whatever you do, your body and mind must be flexible. Usually we attach to our own territory of the five skandhas, the six senses, our customs, habits, and memories. But are you sure of your existence? Stably and steadfastly, I don't think so. Your own territory is very shaky. To be sure of your existence with confidence, You have to see yourself doing something in the universe with all living beings, not in your individual territory. This is difficult, but you have to do it. You have to realize that point in a practical way. Some people don't believe that it is possible to be free for our individual territory. So they say this teaching is abstract. But it really is possible to make this hope become real. First, you have to jump into the expanse of the conscious world with full devotion. When you act with full devotion, your physical territory disappears. It's not destroyed, it disappears. But the territory of your consciousness is still left. So how can you be free from your consciousness? That is your practice, activity itself. If you continue to act with full devotion, your consciousness becomes one with your activity, and the form of your consciousness disappears. The perception of your mind is absorbed into the pure sense of simply action itself. When your body and mind are absorbed in full activity, you completely forget yourself. Spiritual practice has a great power to help all sentient beings. If you practice, you can have great influence. When you stand or when you do zazen, it is beautiful. And people are very moved by your posture because the power and influence of truth is there. The spiritual power is not something you create on the surface of your life. Real spiritual power is the power behind power. The power behind power is the true meaning of effort. It is action without needing a particular goal. Instead of expecting to get a result from our effort, we give quality to our effort. Instead of expecting to get a result from our effort, we give quality to our effort. This is a very important practice for us. That's why spiritual life is very calm, very quiet, and very stable. That's why you can be very calm and stable. By your full devotion, the phenomenal world and unknown time and space come together and work together in your life, right here and right now. At that time, you are calmly and stably walking on Buddha's path, and you live freely in peace and harmony. The beauty of existence appears in your life as the functioning of wisdom. And your action is right because it is manifesting the truth. The human form called Buddha arises as time and space, and that form really helps people. So let's walk together with hope and make our life mature. Then, by compassionate action based on wisdom, we can help all sentient beings move one step toward the future. That's pretty good for us. So Dogen Zenji continues by saying, closely examine this feeling. Without your complete effort right now, nothing would be actualized and nothing would flow. Do not think flowing is like wind and rain moving from east to west. The entire world is not unchangeable, is not immovable, it flows. In another lecture, this one was in 1965, Shunryu Suzuki said, Zazen practice is wisdom seeking for wisdom. Wisdom seeks wisdom is Zazen practice, and our everyday life is wisdom. Realization of our precepts and correct conduct in our everyday life is our everyday life. Realization of our practice and appropriate conduct in our daily is our daily life. When our everyday life is based on wisdom, we call it precepts. And when we sit, we do not do anything. We just sit. I am responsible for what I do. Now, when I make some decision, I listen to Buddha nature. Should I do that? Here you have in your everyday life precepts, and you have freedom too. Whatever you do is up to you. As long as you have freedom, you will make some decision, and you will be responsible for that. You should not say, Buddha should be responsible for it. I don't mind. I'm not responsible. You can't say that in your everyday life. So in our everyday life, we should have precepts, and we should observe the precepts instead of leaving responsibility to Buddha. We should be responsible for that. But at the same time, we have freedom. There is no need for you to be bound by the precepts. The precepts are formulated by your own choice. As long as you take conscious activity, there is freedom. And at the same time, you should be responsible for that. That is true freedom. To leave all the responsibility to Buddha is not freedom. Someone may say that whatever you do, that is Buddha nature. It doesn't matter what you do. This is a misunderstanding. But morality without Buddha nature is just a moral code. And you will be enslaved by these rules. That is a rigid moral code in which you will be enslaved. But if you become aware of Buddha nature, that is freedom, and that is not a rigid set of rules. You will do it by your own choice, and you will do it according to your true nature. That is complete freedom, and that is also moral action. So in this sense, you have freedom. Moral code is not always the same. It's not permanent. Strictly speaking, there is a moral code, whatever you do. So we say, Zen and precepts is one. In everyday life, we call it precepts, and in the practice of Zazen, we call it Zen. So Zen in everyday life should be the self-use of our true nature. So in this sense, precepts and Zen is not different. It is one. This is a very important point. So we say Zen and precepts is one. In everyday life, we call it moral action. And in the practice of Zazen, we call it Zen. So Zen in everyday life should be the self-use of our true nature. So in this sense, precepts and Zen is not different. It is one. This is a very important point. Dogen's being time continues. Flowing is like spring. Spring with all its numerous aspects is called flowing. When spring flows, there is nothing outside of spring. Study this in detail. Spring invariably flows through spring. Although flowing itself is not spring, flowing occurs throughout spring. This flowing is completed at just this moment of spring. Examine this thoroughly, coming and going. Canadian winters are very long. Remember when I was a kid living in Canada, I would be really excited looking for the arrival of spring. I remember running home from school, so excited to tell my mom that I'd seen the first robin of the year. I saw a robin today at recess, so now it's spring. But Dogen's pointing out that spring isn't, the arrival of one robin or the blooming of one plum blossom. It is everything all at once, all cooperating to manifest spring. At San Francisco Zen Center, we had special ceremonies for the spring and fall equinox and for the summer and winter solstices. And we were invited to give words for the season. When I was here, so I was more than invited. I was encouraged. And I had to be the first person to give some words of the season. But every spring I would recite the same haiku by Ryokan. How could we ever grow tired of life? Spring has come again, and cherry trees bloom in the mountains. How could we ever grow tired of life? Spring has come again, and cherry trees bloom in the mountains. I don't know what that has to do with bloom time, but it's a favorite haiku of mine. So, just going to read a short section from Seeds for a Boundless Life by Zenkei Blanche Hartman. Katagiri Roshi came up from Los Angeles to help with San Francisco Zen Center, and he was given Zazen instruction. In the course of Zazen instruction, he said, "We sit to settle the self on the self and let the flower of our life force bloom." That was another one of those moments that had deeply moved me, and it has stayed with me forever. How do we let the flower of this life force bloom if there is nothing to gain from Zen practice? If this is it, our life as it is, and there is nothing to get and we are complete as we are, where does this effort come from? What is the purpose of it if there is no goal? It comes from the one who requires it. It's like, what is the effort that daffodils make in order to bloom? There they are, under the ground, in the dark. We're doing something. Something is happening under the ground and in the dark that results in the daffodil bloom that we see when we walk down the path. What kind of effort is this that we make to allow this blooming to be completely itself, and with which we meet the world and appreciate this opportunity to be who we are? The work of a daffodil preparing to bloom is very quiet. It doesn't look around to see if it is doing it right. It finds the bloom within itself somehow. It comes from the nature of the bulb. It is beautiful from the beginning. It is completely there. It just needs the conditions around it to help it bloom. In Zen, practice centers and teachers provide the conditions to help Buddhas bloom. But really, it is all there, completely present, right with you from the beginning. This is our faith. In faith that we are Buddha, we enter Buddha's way. In faith that we can bloom fully in the most appropriate way, we practice this practice. The spirit of our practice is to practice without trying to acquire anything, because we already have everything we need. Without trying to be anything other than just this person, because just this person is a Buddha from the beginning. We practice to express and realize and settle on the suchness of this person so that it can manifest in whatever activity we undertake, so that our oneness with all beings become evident. Can we do that? Can we make it happen? Just sit and just be willing to be here as just this one person and allow what arises to come out. Be willing to be just this person. Can we sit Zazen, not judging whether we're doing it right or doing it wrong, and just practice knowing the body? So, we're almost done. Good news, we're almost done. So the last line of being time for today In your study of flowing, if you imagine the objective to be outside of yourself, and that you flow and move through hundreds and thousands of worlds for hundreds and thousands of lifetimes, you have not devoutly studied the Buddha way. If you imagine the objective to be outside of yourself, and that you move through hundreds of worlds for hundreds of years, you have not devotedly studied the Buddha way. Another segment of a lecture by Suzuki Roshi, he says, in the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha says, to light up just one corner of the world. Not the entire world, just make it clear and bright right where you are. This is an extremely valuable point in our Zen practice. It does not mean to be negative, or to be narrow-minded, or to be sectarian. It is the way it should be, and everything exists in that way. A bamboo cannot be a pine tree. Bamboo is always bamboo, and so it is valuable. A mixture of bamboo and pine will not serve anything, because bamboo is straight and pine is crooked. So each is valuable in its own way. There is no need for us to be famous, and there is no need for us to be useful. First of all, each one of us should be what they are. This way we will find our world very convenient. If we try to be the most famous, most useful, or most powerful, everyone will lose the true meaning of existence. So we say, when you become yourself, Zen becomes Zen. When bamboo is bamboo, that is Zen. When a pine tree is a pine tree, that is Zen. This is to realize our inmost nature, or our innermost request by ourselves. Our innermost request works for every existence and is developed from every other existence and is universal, but the way of expression for each one of us should be different. In the Lotus Sutra, Buddha says to light up just one corner of the world. It does not mean to be narrow-minded or to be sectarian. It is the way it should be, and everything exists in that way. Bamboo cannot be a pine tree. Bamboo is valuable because it is always bamboo. A mixture of bamboo and pine will not serve anything, because bamboo is straight and pine is crooked. So each is valuable in its own way. There is no need for us to be famous, and no need for us to be useful. Each one of us should be who they are. This way, we will find our world very convenient. So we say, when you become yourself, Zen becomes Zen. When bamboo is bamboo, that is Zen. When a pine tree is a pine tree, that is Zen. This is to realize our inmost nature, or our innermost request for ourselves. Our innermost request works for every existence and is developed from every other existence, and it is universal, but the way of expression for each should be different. And finally, as I like to do, I will give the last word to Mary Oliver. This poem is Mornings at Blackwater. For years, every morning, I drank from Blackwater Pond. It was flavored with oak leaves and also, no doubt, the feet of ducks. And it always assuaged me from the dry bowl of the very far past. What I want to say is that the past is the past and the present is what your life is. And you are capable of choosing what that will be, darling citizen. So come to the pond or the river of your imagination or the harbor of your longing, and put your lips to the world and live your life. For years, every morning I drank from Blackwater Pond. It was flavored with oak leaves and also, no doubt, the feet of ducks. And it always assuaged me from the dry door of a very far past. What I want to say is that the past is the past, and the present is what your life is. And you are capable of choosing what that will be, garden citizen. So come to the pond, or to the river of your imagination, or the harbor of your longing, and put your lips to the world, and live your life. Thank you very much.
And I needed a push to get me to see. Wherever I am, I'm already free.
Thank you for listening. Please find us at seattlesotozen.org. Our theme music is by Stuart Davis. Gosho!